Welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Catskill region. Cigarette smoking remains the leading cause of preventable death and disease in the United States. Over two-thirds of those adults who smoke want to quit, and more than half try to do so in any given year, but only 1 in 10 will be successful. 10% is all. Nicotine e-cigarettes were designed to help people to stop smoking cigarettes, but their use for withdrawing from regular cigarettes has been has been controversial, as some have argued that it perpetuates the nicotine addiction that cigarettes induce and that it has its own set of toxins. And an additional concern arose that youth, in particular, may be taking up e-cigarettes and quickly getting addicted to nicotine. Well, JAMA, the official publication, the official journal of the American Medical Association, just published evidence-based recommendations about the use of e-cigarettes from a working group with what's called the Treatment Research Network of the International Society for Research and on Nicotine and Tobacco. And their recommendations for use of e-cigarettes were published in the July 30th issue of JAMA. But in that same issue, Dr. Jamie Hartman Boyce, who is an associate professor in health policy and management at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, wrote an editorial about the recommendations on the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. And I'm delighted to have Jamie join us today to discuss these recommendations and her perspectives on them. Thank you so much, Dr. Jamie Hartman Boyce, for joining me today on Health Cetera in the Catskills.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Great. So tell us a little bit about why these recommendations were generated from this Treatment Research Network of this International Society for Research in Nicotine and Tobacco on the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. Why were these recommendations developed, and what concerns have been swirling around the use of e-cigarettes? Talk a little bit about that in terms of also why these recommendations now.
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, smoking remains a really big deal. It's still the leading preventable cause of death and disease. And clinicians over time, and as e-cigarettes have become more popular, have really expressed a lot of uncertainty and concern about what they should be counseling their patients who smoke when it comes to e-cigarettes. If they have patients who don't smoke, then it's very easy to counsel don't vape either. But in people who smoke, there's been a lot of controversy, misinformation, confusion around the potential benefits and risks of using e-cigarettes. And we know a lot of physicians have expressed discomfort about discussing this with patients, and we also know patients are bringing them up with their doctors. And so these guidelines were really, we hope, a step to help facilitate those conversations and clinical encounters between patients and physicians. And those concerns, you know, you mentioned some of them. Concerns about youth uptake and youth use of e-cigarettes is a major one. There are also a lot of concerns about all of the unknowns when it comes to e-cigarettes. They are a relatively new technology, though they've been around for a little while now. But there's also a lot of variation within different e-cigarettes, which might affect how well they might work at helping you quit smoking and also what risks they might pose.
I didn't know that. Say a little bit more about this, about the variation between these brands of e-cigarettes.
Absolutely. So my guess is that a lot of people listening, and you yourself, will have seen some terrifyingly awful things happen in the news to people from vaping, right? The thing that we maybe think most about is right before COVID overtook our news cycle, there was a lot of concern about a state of vaping-related serious lung injuries in young people. And when we dig into these reports of these kind of immediate, acute, really bad effects of vaping, what we find over and over again is that those are not coming from regulated nicotine-containing devices, right? These are coming from things where people have maybe mixed the e-liquid in their garage. They put in other illicit substances. They put in things that we know no one should ever inhale. So I'm always really cautious when I talk about the risks of e-cigarettes, but actually this is not one product class. We can't say something overall. When we're talking about these guidelines and what physicians might recommend, we are talking about regulated nicotine-containing e-cigarettes from a trusted source.
Great. Good. Thank you for that clarification. So tell us what there were three recommendations in this JAMA report from this International Society for Research on Nicotine and Tobacco. Three recommendations. Tell us what those recommendations were.
Yeah, so the way they kind of frame it is that they have one overarching recommendation and three recommendations within that. So their overarching recommendation is that physicians should integrate e-cigarettes into conversations on the risks and benefits of all evidence-based pharmacologic treatments for smoking cessation. And the three recommendations that fall under that umbrella one, the first one is to include e-cigarettes on the list of options to support smoking cessation alongside FDA-approved medications. The second one is to assess and correct misperceptions regarding the harm and safety of cigarettes versus e-cigarettes. And the third gives a list of key questions that physicians can ask to guide that decision-making process, really following a shared decision-making pathway.
You know, and they did use the language of physicians, but I want to point out that most of this work is going to get done in primary care in particular, and that it, particularly in rural areas, the primary care is being provided by nurse practitioners and physician assistants, as well as every once in a while a physician or a doctor of osteopathy. So these really apply beyond physicians to actually all clinicians. I'm not practicing in primary care, but I do talk to people all the time about what is your plan to quit, and I rarely bring up e-cigarettes, so it's changing how I think about when I ask that question. So you also differentiate in your editorial that you differentiate between evidence and values. And in fact, the full title of your editorial is Physician Advice on E-Cigarettes for Smoking Cessation, Differentiating Evidence from Values. Talk about this.
Yeah, so I've been involved in this space for over a decade now of regularly reviewing all the new studies that come out that look at the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. And what we've found over time is that the evidence has become more and more clear that regulated nicotine e-cigarettes can absolutely help people quit smoking, and they don't seem to introduce health risks when used in that particular capacity. But over time, I'd say this has become more and more of a controversial and contested area, and despite there being, you know, more and more independently funded research really showing the utility of e-cigarettes for this purpose, I've heard a lot of dialogue around like, oh, the evidence is uncertain, we don't know, you know, there's too many uncertainties here. And so what I wanted to get at when I wrote this editorial and framed it that way is that actually, I think the thing that is causing a lot of the concern and uncertainty around recommending e-cigarettes for smoking cessation is not the evidence. Okay, the evidence is clear. It's a whole range of different values, which are very legitimate, right? This is not to say the values are less legitimate than the evidence, but it's really trying to distinguish one from the other.
Mm. And so you talk about, whether we should be promoting the use of vaping for cigarette withdrawal, whether this is creating, our promotion of it is creating this general societal acceptance of e-cigarettes, so that when youth, and a couple years ago up here, I think it was graduate or undergraduate nursing student, do an assessment of some of the ads for e-cigarettes and vaping, Juul in particular, on our convenience stores, the gas station stores. And we found that indeed they were often situated in the lower half of the door, so the children were seeing them as they were walking into the store. And this being a tactic in terms of hooking in, and the whole Juul e-vaping being a product that was pink and it was designed to appeal to younger people. What are your concerns about this, and what do we know in terms of evidence versus values in regard to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think concerns about youth vaping are really the biggest concerns when it comes to vaping, because we know, fortunately, in the U.S. at the moment, our youth smoking rates are at a historic low, right? So we know we probably have people who are vaping who would not have otherwise smoked. And for them, vaping nicotine is only going to present risks. We also know, as you mentioned, from all of the advertisements we've seen, the various packaging and names on some e-cigarettes, that these are going to appeal to youth, right? And I think one of the big concerns when it comes to recommending e-cigarettes for smoking cessation is, oh my gosh, are we going to give them good press, right? Like, concerns about, is this going to somehow normalize them? Is it going to reassure people? I have to say that one of the things I always think of when I think of this is, I was living in England when e-cigarettes first came on the market, and I remember being in a hospital for an appointment and seeing a public health messaging campaign on the wall in which they showed a man in his, I'm going to say, 70s, 80s, clearly someone who'd smoked for a long time, he had smoking-related disease, and he was saying that he'd switched from a cigarette to an e-cigarette, and it had kind of improved his breathing, he could follow his grandkids around, right? So that was clearly promoting the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, and I've yet to see any evidence that that appealed to young people. In fact, possibly quite the opposite, right? So I think what comes up here that's really important is messaging and how we frame that messaging. And I think concerns about youth have really dominated the space in many ways. But I think one of the things that we've forgotten as part of this dialogue is that adult smoking harms youth as well, right? Through things like secondhand smoke. So it's been so often framed as like, oh, do we protect the kids or do we help the adults quit smoking? But I think it is important to remember this is a nuanced area, and helping adults quit smoking also helps kids.
So with those nuances, let me ask you another question here about the use of e-cigarettes as a smoking cessation tool. So you're still getting the nicotine. So the nicotine is what addicts you to the product. So you're still getting the nicotine. So how does it help? It gets you off of cigarettes that are the regular cigarettes that are, we know, are high in toxins and we know can do all this damage to your lungs, to your heart, as well as you just said, to other people around you when you're exhaling that smoke. To what extent do we have strong data showing that if I go to the e-cigarette, I am eventually going to be able to somehow get off of the nicotine and get off the e-cigarette?
Another excellent question. So I would start it by saying that harms that come from smoking come from burning tobacco, right? Not actually from the nicotine itself. Nicotine is what's keeping you addicted, but it is not the thing that's causing the cancer and heart disease that we think of when we think of smoking. So when you're switching to a nicotine e-cigarette, or indeed to something like a traditional nicotine replacement therapy, like a patch or a gum, which have been around for decades, you're removing a lot of that harm, but you are maintaining that addiction to nicotine or that dependence on nicotine. And one of the newer areas of research that I'm keeping a very close eye on, we regularly review this evidence too, is on interventions to help people quit vaping, right? Whether or not they've transitioned from smoking to vaping, or actually they've never smoked and they're just vaping. And though it's early days in terms of those studies, a lot of them have been funded but not completed yet, that evidence is really pretty promising, right? We're seeing text message and mobile phone-based programs that are working to help people quit vaping. We're also seeing the stop smoking drug varenicline showing a lot of promise for helping people quit vaping. So I think one way that we hope maybe this will be looked at in the future is that vaping is a step on your off-ramp, okay? So you're smoking, then you switch entirely to vaping. At that point, you're maintaining that nicotine addiction, and you are also considerably reducing your risk. And eventually, when you are very confident you're not going to relapse to smoking, then you can consider switching away from vaping as well.
And that just ties into my next question about harm reduction, because we certainly embrace a harm reduction with approach where I'm working with Catskills Pathways to Recovery, which takes an approach that's about harm reduction, particularly around opioids and other addictive drugs. But nicotine in smoking, we did the student who was from SUNY Delhi, she actually did this work on behalf of the Addiction Coalition because it is another addiction. And so that harm reduction piece that you just talked about, I think, becomes very important and coincides with how we're thinking about other kinds of addictions. So thank you for that. I also want to bring up one of the things that was talked about, I think, in both the article, and I think you mentioned it in your editorial are these Zen pouches, which I didn't know anything about. Tell us what these Zen pouches are. Z-Y-N.
So once you know about them, you might start noticing them. There's a couple different popular brands of pouches available in the U.S. right now, Zen being one of them, also Velo and On, and I often see those advertised in convenience stores. And what they are is they're these small white pouches that you place between your gum and your lip. They don't contain any tobacco leaf at all. They just contain nicotine and some other substances. And essentially, they are a way to absorb nicotine into your bloodstream through your mouth without it ever hitting your lungs. So these have been around, I'd say, you know, I think they were introduced in the mid-2010s, but really didn't become widely known until the last few years. And, you know, I notice them now on the ground when I'm walking around campus, for example. And I think they might represent another step on this harm reduction continuum that we might think about, right? They're really new. We don't have long-term data on their use or effects, but you're not inhaling them, which is probably a good thing. So we might think about e-cigarettes as being less harmful than smoking. And though we don't have enough evidence to say for sure yet, my guess is oral nicotine pouches are less harmful than both of those things, but still more harmful than not using any form of nicotine or then using something that's been approved as a pharmacotherapy like a patch or a gum.
Yeah, one of the things that I've always talked to people about who I've noticed were using the regular tobacco pouches, oral pouches that they would put in between their lip and their gum, is that they have a high incidence of mouth cancer, oral cancers. Do we know if the Zen pouches do that, even though it's just pure nicotine? They do constrict blood vessels, and is that damaging to tissue? We don't know that yet.
We don't know compared to nothing, is what I would say. Uh-huh. But we do know compared to pouches or other sorts of chewing tobacco that contains tobacco leaf, that these are posing much fewer risks in that regard.
Great. Now, so these recommendations that you just noted that came out in JAMA are out there. What do you think people should do with these recommendations?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I really hope that they are of use to clinicians, right, in facilitating these conversations. I think one of the things that comes up in these conversations I have heard anecdotally is like, okay, if someone is open to switching to vaping, what product do they use, right? How do they choose to do that? We actually, most of the people who smoke who we might be seeing in primary care are older adults who have maybe never tried or been exposed to vaping before. So I think these are a good starting point for conversations, and then I would really encourage people to look at the list of FDA-authorized vaping products, because those have gone through really extensive testing. They have gone through very, very careful review, and yet we know most of the vaping products that people are using in this country are not FDA-authorized, right? And so therefore we're less certain about what risks they might pose.
So they would find out this list of approved treatments by going to the FDA website or Googling FDA and smoking cessation?
If you Google FDA authorized vaping products or even FDA e-cigarette list, anything like that should bring it up. There's 45, I want to say, on the list right now. And my guess is it will keep expanding.
So we do have people here who continue to smoke, and I've also run into people who have a family member or friend who's smoking, and they're concerned. I when I see somebody smoking, if it's a stranger, I often say, I'm a nurse and I have to ask you, do you have a plan for quitting smoking? And that arose from recommendations that came out from the CDC some time ago. And so what are your recommendations to people who either want to quit smoking or have a family or friend who they really want to encourage to quit smoking?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to note that, unfortunately, quitting smoking can be really hard for a lot of people, right? And that is not down to some sort of individual failure. Right? These devices, cigarettes have been designed to be super addictive, and we know that our genetics, biology, environment can all affect how difficult it is to quit as well. One of the important things that I always like to say is don't be discouraged. Like, if you've tried before and it hasn't worked, kind of amazingly, the data does not suggest that you're less likely to succeed the next time. And a lot of people have to try to quit smoking 10, 15 times before it actually sticks. And they might need to try out different ways to quit smoking. And that might be a place where, let's say, they've tried all these FDA drug products, they've tried counseling. They might want to think about vaping as another thing that's kind of in their toolkit for helping them stop smoking. And I think if you're a family member, you're there for someone you love, you want to make sure they know that they're supported. And you also do not want to take a kind of blaming or stigmatizing approach, right? It's really important to remember that most adults who smoke want to quit. They were addicted by a very, very addictive product that was probably aggressively marketed to them when they were very young. So I think coming at it from a non-judgmental place is really important. And just the reassurance, like, it might not have worked last time, it's worth another try.
And I am a nicotine addict. I know that if I have a puff on a cigarette today, I will smoke a pack within a week. And it took me 4 times to quit. And the last 2, I did it with hypnosis. And the last time when I did the hypnosis, I had it on a tape. And I took a month trip out of the country. And and so I got out of the environment. And it was enough time for that nicotine to pretty much get out of my system. Not totally, but enough. And I also worked in the hypnotic suggestion that if I thought about smoking, I would push it out of my mind. And there was actually a wall that I would visualize. And I'd put the wall up, and then I wouldn't think about it. And so I want to reaffirm what you just said about even if you've quit several times and it hasn't worked, there are new products out there. If we're talking about today with the e-cigarettes, there are other kinds of medications that can help you with that withdrawal. You talk to your primary care provider and make a plan. And it is not easy, but you can do it. So if people would like more information on your work or more information on quitting smoking, how can they get this information?
Yeah, well, I have a very distinctive name. So if you want more information on my work, all you have to do is Google Jamie Hartman Boyce. I am the only one out there. And if you're interested in quitting smoking, the first places I would go would be state websites. So wherever you're based, take a look. Every state has its own website about the resources available and the evidence available on quitting smoking. This is something that states invest really heavily in. And what we do know for sure is that you are more likely to succeed in quitting smoking if you get some support to do so.
So the states would have different recommendations?
Not different recommendations, but, for example, like different quit lines or text messaging services, depending on where you're a resident. Yeah.
Great. So that is Jamie Hartman Boyce. Hartman with 2 N's, Hartmann hyphen Boyce, Boyce. And Jamie is Jamie. And Dr. Hartman Boyce is an associate professor in health policy and management at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, who wrote this editorial on physician advice on e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, differentiating evidence from values, available, I think, it's not open access. It's available on JAMA if you can go through your library to get it. Thank you so much, Jamie, for coming on to Health Center and the Catskills today and talking about this important issue.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great day. Great. If you know somebody, ask them, and this is a really important step to take. Ask them, you know, do you have a plan to quit? And if not, you know, can you help them to make a plan? Or can you refer them to someone who can work with them on that? It's really important, and I will tell you that I know of 2 people I have said this to who were, one was a total stranger, although I met her then later on. And the other was somebody I every once in a while, maybe once a year, would work with. And both of them came back to me a year later and said, thank you for asking about that question. I've got the plan. I've been off cigarettes for this amount of time, etc. Now, the one relapsed, but he's back on the program again, and he's not a smoker at this point. So just asking and being supportive can really help.
WIOX Frostburg. Can you hear it?